Let me introduce Ari, and then Ari's going to take it from here. He's going to moderate a discussion about what did you guys decide in this case and why did you decide what you decided. I'm pleased to introduce my friend Ari. Ari is a CEO, investor, and board member. His industry experience includes clean tech, energy, hardware, software, industrial, transportation. He's also served for 12 years in the Israeli military, so don't mess with Ari. Ari is an author of the book Lay an Egg and Make Chicken Soup. It is his perspective on how to capitalize on innovation. And Jerry Schaufeld wrote a book on the same theme. Ari is on the board of directors of three technology companies. He holds a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering from Ben-Gurion University, an MBA from Tel Aviv University, and he lives in my second favorite city, which is Austin, Texas. So, Ari, can you take it away?
Yeah, okay. Thanks for having me, and thanks for coming to this session, everybody. Jerry, how do you spell your last name?
Schaufeld. Spell it. Schaufeld. He's at WPI, Worcester Polytech Institute.
Oh, here I see that. Okay, let me just write it down. The reason, well, we're kind of colleagues on the book side.
And I spend time at the Technion. I'm doing research there. So.
Ah, cool. Okay, so where are you now? Are you in the U.S.?
I'm not in Israel. I'm safely ensconced in Worcester. Or close to it.
Cool. So, Larry, how much time do we have?
Until 6:30.
6:30, half an hour. Okay, so our group, I'll talk about the case. I experienced the case in multiple assignments I had. So I took three stories, put them into one and simplified it that we can cover it in an hour and a half. So you're seeing here a combination of three cases, all simplified into one story. Maybe our group, we discussed the case, basically we had an advantage of me being in a room. So maybe we should go to the other groups and see what recommendations and how they address the two questions that we had in the case.
That's fine. Group four is Al, Chris, Peter, and Rajesh. Would somebody talk about what they decided?
Raj, there we go. Can you hear me now?
Yep, sorry. You're good.
Okay, I was volunteered to present what we came up with. So I'll just cover some of the topics that we hit upon. I think, overall, there is a bit of, I wouldn't call it necessarily surprise, but we were impressed by a couple of things. One was that the company and the investors did not upfront seem to pay a lot of attention to protection of the IP and the technology and having sort of agreements, processes, procedures, defined, given that this is a tech-oriented company to begin with. And so the fact that that was lacking obviously, created a source of exposure. Similarly, we were impressed, during our conversations that the founders were, diluted so much, so rapidly in the process, which just brought them to a place because they weren't getting paid much to, in the early days of the company. On top of that, even though their equity has doubled in value, it has been diluted quite a bit. And so that was sort of just contextually some of the conversation that we had. Now, around that, we also, I think to the second question that was raised, collectively, everyone recognized that assuming you'd get out of this sticky situation, that there's clearly a need to put in place the usual IP protections, routine, consultation with IP counsel, and of course, processes, procedures, and agreements that would protect you going forward. So not to belabor that much, but I think everyone understood that and agreed with it. So the more, the real problem was, okay, what do you do about the current situation? And how do you get Vlad to sort of come, off of what his, what he's asserted now, which is they want 5% of the equity. And I think we saw sort of a range of options that were available to the board and to the founders, the other founders, in terms of what could be done. I think we, you know, felt that there clearly was a need up front to have some conversation probably between or among the founders, with between the two founders and Vlad, about you know, the fact that they'd started this all together. They'd all realized real value increases. They'd all been equal partners. And so, you know, was Vlad actually trying to assert that only he should give 5%, or was he acting sort of on behalf of all of them in making that assertion? And sort of really to see if they could leverage that relationship to help move Vlad off of his position, but also use that relationship as a way to explore with Vlad whether he fully understood the implications of which this, where this track would, could take the company. And by the way, the value that had been not realized, but certainly what was looking like the value that was being created by their joint efforts. Because, if, you know, taken to one extreme, this company could just fall apart and they just lose everything they just built, right? So try to impress that on him and see if that would move him. Then there's a sort of middle ground of options, which are really around the investors, the existing investors and the future investors. And by the way, the other founders sitting down and sort of saying, you know, what could be done? Because what Vlad is effectively saying is, you know, my efforts are worth more than I'm making off of them. And, you know, and my contributions are worth more than what I'm making off of them. So how do you sort of find a way to close that gap? And obviously there's a question about whether you close it just for him and close it for the other founders as well. But putting that aside for a minute, you know, what would that solution look like? Is it 5%? Is it 3%? Is it 2%? By the way, you know, I think our instincts were that whatever that acceding to his demands, so to speak, in whatever form that takes, it's not sort of upfront, but it's probably over a period of time. It's probably to get him to sign all the right agreements and sort of get that IP protected properly going forward. It's probably with some type of vesting. You know, those types of things could be thought about as a way of maybe sharing more of the value, again, with Vlad and maybe the other founders as well, to be, you know, fair in terms of the value that's being created here and the pace at which that value has been created. And so it's clearly sort of an opportunity to explore that space. And then I think on the more extreme set of options, I call it extreme, but sort of the hard edge set of options, you know, that are out there is obviously, you know, the threat of legal action, either civil or criminal. You know, the comment was made in the case that the IP is clearly the, you know, property. This was work done at the cost and of the company. And so legally it is the company's property, but maybe you could use legal action as a form of further pressure, persuasion to get him to, you know, go down a more conciliatory route of some sort that is more in line with either, you know, some, you know, negotiated solution, which isn't quite 5%, or maybe just, you know, sort of rethinking the position they had taken to begin with. So I think I turn to my colleagues, see if they have anything else that they want to add here, but try to capture the main thrust of our conversation.
Very nicely summarized.
Thank you. I will respond to all the points at the end, but one comment about what you said, Vlad was trying to negotiate just for himself, not for his other founders, partners.
Okay. Let's look at group five, which was Brian, Craig, Kevin, and Ralph.
Hey, Larry. Bri here. I will build upon what Rashesh kind of articulated. So when we spoke as a team, we highlighted what we felt were three errors early on that they were trying to rectify. So again, from the investor's perspective, the way the case was written, we thought that they were too greedy initially, and therefore there were inefficient incentives for the co-founders. We also felt that the lack of understanding the IP, proprietary and otherwise, and making sure that that was secure was an error on the investor's perspective. The last thing we also commented on was this 100% board agreement that is written in. We felt that was an error too, because that's only going to create ongoing challenges if that's not rectified. So we took it from the perspective of we needed to correct these three errors. And how can we best do that? And even though the Russian was asking and negotiating on his own behalf, we felt from the investor's perspective that we needed to take care of and motivate and incentivize all three in order to continue to hit the milestones and the goals and objectives for creating wealth for us as investors, but also for them as founders. So we took it from the perspective of let's do a horse trade. Let's correct those three fundamental errors. And whether it's us giving them 3%, 4%, 5%, we could negotiate that. We also talked about pay for performance or having certain milestones put in place to kind of protect us to secure the certain things that we needed to correct those errors. So we kind of left it in the place of to fix those things, we probably have to give more. We cut too deeply to begin with, and that probably was a fundamental error too. And so how do we rectify that, not only for this round, but for subsequent rounds to attract additional investors as needed based upon critical milestones?
I'm sensitive that we, thank you very much. I'm sensitive that we've got 20 minutes left. I'd like to put it in, Ari, what did your group decide? And then maybe give us kind of your perspective about this whole issue.
We kind of, since I was in the room, we cheated a little bit. Luckily, there are lots of legal aspects, and Mindy was our legal advisor in the team. If Mindy, if you want to give your legal perspective, and then I'll go and tell the real story.
We had a discussion about a lot of this, the issues that have been raised, but also in particular, sort of the duty of the directors, the responsibility, the fiduciary duty. What could they do about this guy? What could they put in place going forward if they wanted to keep him? How did they handle the IP? What really was there? And then Ari kept jumping in to kind of give us some like guidance as to kind of where things were going and what was going on with this guy and how it became a very complicated matter. The guy was not a straight shooter and clearly was trying to upend the business and was very entitled. So we got into some discussions about that and the relationships among the parties and what to do. And when you're brought in like he was, kind of how he had to manage the situation. So we didn't come to any conclusions. We just discussed a lot of the issues and then probed him about where things had gone. So would you say that's accurate, team?
Yep. Thank you, Mindy.
You're welcome.
Is there any other teams, Larry, before I come in?
Please comment.
Sure, on the behalf of team six, I'm going to say ditto, primarily to Raj and to Brian, because we covered those points. You did it very articulately. The two things that, there were three things that didn't get covered is one, what is this fellow standing among the other technology people in the company? Because oftentimes the person who has the IP in his head has people following him or her. And if he leaves, they leave. So at what risk are you putting the overall development talent pool in the company if in fact they're loyal to him, regardless of whether he's a straight shooter or not, because they're excited about the technology? A second factor that we considered was just the cultural backgrounds of the three founders and the fact that they come from places where trust of organizations is very different. If you were raised in behind the Iron Curtain, you've got a very different view of what the government is out to do, what you need to do for yourself, and how much of that can be understood in the motivation as you're negotiating with this person to provide enough consideration to get him to either stand back or agree that they're going to act as three. And then to the last piece of the structure that needs to be put into place for go forward, the three things that need to be corrected. The fourth is more operational, but if in fact Vlad really is the person who has this in his head, the CEO of the business needs to go about making sure that that transfer of knowledge is begun over a period of time, because otherwise he'll continue to hold the business hostage, which is really what he's doing in this case. And the business will lose its underpinnings, whatever the immediate solution is. So I think that's what we would have added, but it's all additive.
Ari, you want to talk about what actually happened and then give us more perspective about cases similar to this?
Okay, so, you know, all of this, thank you, everybody. All of these are good points. All of this advice are correct, and we managed to kind of limp along towards all the points everybody was made. So the real story is I did some consulting to these venture capitals in Israel, and one of them, like the night before, I had to fly back to the US. The night before, this VC came to me and say, hey, there is a company, we need a CEO for, go and talk to them. I went to talk to them the night before the flight, and I sensed there is some problems, but I didn't know to what extent the problem was. So I started to work as the CEO. First thing, you raise a fund. You try to raise a fund, and then comes the board meeting. And, you know, the obvious thing is, okay, the VCs offer money. Everybody will vote in favor. But no, this guy, Vlad, said, no, if I'm not going to vote in favor if you don't give me X, Y, Z. And to Brian's point, sometimes the 100% is not in your control. You may have a certain voting rules in the company's rules of engagement, but then comes a buyer or comes a new investor and they say, I want 100% votes to invest in this company. So yes, I agree with you. We can set it up to be not 100%, but sometime I had a case just last year where the rules of engagement required 80%, but the acquiring company demanded it will be 95%. So that's one. The several people talked about the legal pressure. So coming from Texas to Israel, I thought, okay, I'll get the guy and doing some stumble on something. Turns out the legal system in Israel didn't allow it. I had some proof that he did some criminal activity against the company. So the law in Israel, if you know about the criminal activity, you must report to the police. You don't have the liberty to tell the person, okay, if you are not doing this or that, I'm going to tell the police about the criminal thing you did. And in Israel, it's illegal to do that. So I had to either keep it to myself or go to report to the police. I chose to go to the report to the police after I saw the negotiation failed, but I came to the police. That was early days of internet. The guy there was one cop or one police investigator that was responsible for IT investigations, and he had a 6 months backlog of cases, and he said, okay, I'll address your case in 6 months. So I knew I cannot count on him. What we did at the time, I played the three founders one against each other, and eventually we got this Vlad guy to be voted out of the board of directors. The investors was part of the same negotiation side. So they knew that that's what we're trying to do, to basically vote out Vlad from the board. I fired him as an employee. So he was an employee of the company and on a board. So it was easy to fire him as an employee, but it was not easy to get rid of him on the board, because the rules of engagement or the structure of the board said that the three founders have to vote the two representatives on the board. But I managed to negotiate the two other founders against this guy and vote him out for the next tenure period. And that's how we managed to get all the votes we needed to accept the investment. The other thing everybody mentioned, and that's true, put some process in place to force the knowledge transition from one person to additional people. And that we did it after the fact. It turns out that in a real story, I had two people that knew enough about the technology. One of them was Vlad, the other one was another co-founder. So getting rid of Vlad in this particular situation didn't cause that much damage from the IP situation. But I'm advisor to another company that had a similar situation where the CTO was had the IP in his head. And back then, with that company, we negotiated and somehow compromised on some equity that both sides agree. And the legal counsel of the company said a good deal is where both parties are equally unhappy. So in that situation, we were both equally unhappy, but we had a deal.
Any questions? Any questions? Comments or issues this raises? Anyone gone through something similar in their careers?
Larry?
Yeah.
In our group, we also spent time looking at Rick's role. He was unable to put boundaries around Vlad. Maybe nobody could. But did you spend time looking at his role in the company?
Yeah. So in the real story, there were three founders, and right. I'm kind of a Rick thing, but I was not a founder of the company. I was outside hired CEO, and basically what was expected of me is to resolve the conflict between the investors and the founders, but it took time. It took about a year to
really
clean it up because of this voting thing, that they had a certain schedule to vote people into the board. So I did everything I could in my power, but the board seat was one that I had to wait until March for this guy to be voted out and add somebody, another founder to the board of directors, and then accept the investment.
Eric, if I may ask a question.
Yep.
So you addressed sort of the process of how you got the Vlad equivalent out. What effect did it have on the company from a technology perspective? And was his claim, you know, if his claim was actually like the case portrays here, that he was sort of so central, you know, take him off the board would not have an effect, but then getting rid of him as an employee, what did you do to bridge that gap? Or was that gap not as substantial as he claimed?
So in the real case, I had basically two technology people, and Vlad's power was only the fact that he was on the board and voting against the investment. That's one case. The other case I had, similar to that, the CTO, the other Vlad, did have most of the knowledge in his head, but in that case, we managed to negotiate an agreeable equity transition. And his equity was, as many of you mentioned, had some steps related or linked to milestones in the transition of the knowledge.
Was Vlad's technology, did it end up having good technology? Did it end up growing?
Yeah, in two cases, the company still exists and continue to grow. The first company I had, what jeopardized the growth of the company was a number everybody here is familiar. It's called 2008. So we went through a 2008 kind of downsizing but then bounced back. They didn't close the company. The VC closed all the companies in their portfolio except for our company. They just downsized it and then bounced back once the economy came back. The other case that helped me build this story is very recent case, and the company still exists and managed to buy out that CTO with equity milestones. The third case was totally in real estate, but the guy had voting power, like I presented in this story, that kind of jeopardized a transaction that we had on the table. That, by the way, required that. That's the case where the article of association required only 80% votes, but the acquiring company, the new investor, required 95% of the votes. So it's not something you can plan ahead. I had another M&A case where the acquiring company demanded 100% of the votes for the transaction to happen.
Ari, we have 5 minutes left, and I'd like to change the topic. Tell us a little bit about your book, Make Chicken Soup. Lay an egg and make chicken
soup. Lay an egg and make chicken soup. This is the book. It talks about commercializing innovation. Most books about innovation, I don't know. Most books about innovation talks about how to come up with new good ideas and how to fund them. My book focuses on the execution, how to commercialize the innovation to a commercial success. I was a guest speaker in a university here talking about this book. I was invited to talk about this book for one hour. And then the end result, I did, I don't know, they liked my talk or something. They hired me to teach the same class next semester. So I'm scrambling and getting my arms around this syllabus.
Well, good. If anybody's interested in the book, it's available on Amazon.com. I want to thank Ari for writing a very interesting case. You got to tell us, is there a story behind the teddy bear behind you?
Teddy bear. Oh, so yes, there is. My wife did her undergraduate in Israel in psychology, but then I was transferred to Austin, your second favorite city. I don't know who is the first. Well, I can guess. And after we became empty nesters, she decided to go back to school. So she went to UT to do her architecture degree. And the teddy bear, I don't know if you can see in the picture, but it's a UT Austin teddy bear with a longhorn. So that's what gifts of becoming a student again at the age of 45, I think it was at the time.
Well, tell her, hook them horns for me.
Yeah, right.
One thing, thank everybody for your participation this evening at Seat at the Table. We will not have a seat at the table in December. We have wisely decided not to compete against Christmas, but we will have a seat at the table in January. George, I'm forgetting his last name, but he's the former head of the Ernst & Young operation in New England, and he's going to be presenting a case in January.
George Neville, Larry.
George Neville, yes, George Neville, I'm sorry. So thank you very much for attending. Have a great Thanksgiving and a wonderful Christmas. Take care.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, Larry. Thanks, Larry. Bye. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Larry. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Good to see you
bye-bye.
All.
Bye-bye.
Have a good holiday.
You too.